सुखाराज्यम ऋजुभिः अनन्या शरणैर्नृभिः कृतज्ञाखो न सेवेता दुराराजाम असाधुभिः. Not render his loving service to such a great master as the personality of Godhead. The Lord can be easily pleased by spotless devotees who resort exclusively to him for protection. Though the unrighteous man finds it difficult to propitiate him. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Every living entity, especially persons in the human race, must feel grateful for the benedictions offered by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Anyone, therefore, with a simple heart of gratefulness must be Krishna conscious and offer devotional service to the Lord. Those who are actually thieves and rogues do not recognize or acknowledge the benedictions offered to them by the Supreme Lord, and they cannot render him devotional service. Ungrateful persons are those who do not understand how much benefit they are deriving by the arrangement of the Lord. They enjoy the sunshine and moonshine, and they get water free of charge. Yet they do not feel grateful, but simply go on enjoying these gifts of the Lord. Therefore, they must be called thieves and rogues. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada is very mercifully giving us most important instructions by which we can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the purport, there is great emphasis that anyone, therefore, with a simple heart of gratefulness, must be Krishna conscious and offer devotional service to the Lord. Simple heart with gratefulness is an essential prerequisite to be able to understand what is Krishna consciousness. Krishna reveals himself according to our particular consciousness. Actually, although Krishna consciousness is a very simple philosophy, it is very, very difficult to understand. Although there is great depths of logic, reason, philosophical explanation, shastric references, because everything materially and spiritually that is within our philosophy is so systematically explained in such thorough detail. But the basic principle is very simple. That we're not this body, that we are the eternal soul, that the nature of the soul is the eternal servant of Lord Krishna, and that Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. He is the all-attractive object of everyone's love. And the only way to approach him is through devotional service, through pleasing him in all of our efforts. And that pleasure is experienced by Krishna to the degree our hearts are pure. By serving Krishna, by remembering Krishna, we purify our hearts. And the easiest and most important way to remember Krishna is to be in the association of his devotees, to hear his glories, and to chant his holy names. That, in essence, is Krishna consciousness philosophy. If someone applies these principles to their life sincerely, that person will definitely go back home, back to Godhead, in due course of time. Why is it that most of the world, even in human species, cannot understand this principle? And even when explaining it to them, it is indigestible. And even devotees who are struggling and striving for so many years to be Krishna conscious, why is it that sometimes they have such difficulty just continuing on? We must have a simple and grateful heart. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple. And here Prabhupada is explaining what it means to be simple. It means to be humble. When we talk about simplicity, we are talking about humility. They are inseparable. Wherever there is pride, there is endless complications. Because when you are proud, you are in a competitive spirit. Not only that, but to the degree you have pride, to that degree you have expectations of what you deserve. The more we expect, or the more we think we deserve, the more we will be frustrated. I think we all have this experience. Because somehow or other, some time or other, we're not going to get what we think we deserve. Just as lust, as explains in Bhagavad Gita, is insatiable. It burns like fire. The more you give it, the more it needs. The false pride is of the same nature. The more you get it, the more it becomes infatuated and demands more, more, and more. When somebody's very small, but they expect something more, and they get it, then they become more infatuated. And then they need more, and more, and more. We were in a Hovalam. There we heard about Hiranyakashipu. He had all the demigods bowing down at his feet. He did not have lotus feet. But he had feet. And those feet were so feared. They were not loved. They were not attractive. They were feared. For everyone was bowing down to him. The whole universe was offering prayers to him. But was he satisfied? No, because whatever they gave him, he considered, I deserve more. And he expected it. So much frustration. In our ordinary life, in our domestic affairs, if you're a husband or a wife or a parent, when you really think, I deserve a certain amount of respect, I deserve a certain amount of attention, affection, I deserve a certain degree of service to me. How many of you have been frustrated in terrible anxiety because you just do not get it. Has that ever happened to any of you? Brahmachari, same situation. Sannyasi, the worst situation. Sannyasi, you expect everything from everyone. Frustrating situation. Humility means I do not deserve anything. Humility means I deserve to be beaten on the head and thrown in fire. Somehow or other, you have looked at me. You should be spitting on me. Or as Prabhupada said, spiting on me. That's a humble devotee. Therefore, a devotee who feels he doesn't deserve anything is grateful for whatever comes. A devotee who is grateful by nature, who has a simple heart, even if bad comes, bad meaning things that are painful or difficult to tolerate, he understands that actually this must be good. Tathenu kampam susumikshamano punjana evatta kritam vipagam vidvagvapu virvidram namaste jivetiya muktapate sadaya bhak. Even when pain, misery, disrespect, insult come to a devotee, with folded palms, he thinks, I deserve so much worse than this. But Krishna, you're so kind, you're just giving me this. I welcome it. Thank you. That is humility. Humility isn't just the external show of saying, I am the most fallen, and you are my Prabhu, and please accept my obeisance. That is a form of humility that should be there. But actual humility is when we are grateful for whatever we receive, thinking that I deserve either nothing or worse. When we read the prayers of the great devotees, when they come before the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is always their prayer. That you have given so much mercy to so many people more worthy than me, I do not deserve it. I have no devotion. I have no good qualities. But still you are giving me this. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu drank from that broken iron pot of Kolavecha Sridhar, he did not think, yes, this is proper. I am a Vaishnava. And Krishna always worships his devotee. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very, very exemplary by taking the water from my pot. Kolavecha Sridhar, as soon as he saw Mahaprabhu doing that, immediately he began to cry. Now I am dead. You are killing me, my Lord. And he fell unconscious. Because he felt from the core of his heart, he had no devotion. Such respect he did not deserve. If he felt he deserved it, but he wanted to take a humble position, he may have spoken like that, but he wouldn't have fallen unconscious. This is the mood of a Vaishnava. When Kalidas was talking to Jadu Thakur, that even though you may be coming from lower family and everything, because you are a Vaishnava, therefore you are worshipable. He quoted many, many scriptures. But Jadu Thakur replied, everything you're saying is true, but it does not apply to me because I am not a devotee. I am a very fallen, sinful person. When you have this disposition, you're grateful for all mercy. And when you're grateful for mercy, that means your heart is receptive to receive it deep, deep to the core. To the degree you are grateful, to that degree the mercy can penetrate to your soul. To the degree you're proud, that pride deflects the mercy. Obstructs the penetration of the kindness of the Lord and His devotees. This is most essential to understand. What is it that makes a devotee beautiful in the eyes of other Vaishnavas, in the eyes of Krishna, and in the eyes of sincere people of the world? It is their gracious, humble nature. When we think we deserve something, if you get it, you're not really that pleased by it, because you feel that I had it coming, if it's something good. We can't even see it as being mercy. The word mercy means to receive something, yet you have no qualification to receive. If you give money to a merchant and he gives you the product, do you consider that mercy? If you go to a restaurant, or here you call hotel, and you give 1,000 rupees and they bring some nice food for you, do you consider, oh, you are so merciful? But if you're begging on the street, you have nothing, and someone gives you that same food offered to Krishna, prasad, then you think, this is mercy. So to the degree we think we deserve the Lord's kindness and His and the devotee's kindness, to that degree we will be frustrated. Because you'll never get enough. But a devotee that is grateful will always be satisfied. Because whatever he or she gets, in whatever way he or she gets it, he can recognize that this is mercy. I don't deserve it. Even when a devotee is being punished, a devotee thinks that this punishment is coming from Krishna. I don't deserve to be punished by Krishna. And we're grateful to receive it with folded palms. Thank you, Krishna. I deserve so much worse. I deserve to be punished directly by Yamaraj and his Yamadutas. But instead, you are personally arranging the situation for my purification. I don't deserve it. Thank you. Then, whatever Krishna is trying to do to purify you has the maximum effect. It actually purifies you. Just like if you have poor digestion, even if you eat the best, most nutritious food, you get very little benefit from it. In the Ayurvedic technology, this is a very, very essential principle. Digestion. If your digestion is good, then if you eat minerals, vitamins, proteins, and all those things, they go right into your body, and naturally your body restores itself when it's ill, and it becomes full of energy and life. But if you have poor digestion, even the best medicine in the world, if you eat the best, most nutritious foods, it just goes in one side and comes out the other side. The body cannot assimilate it, cannot absorb it. So hearing the glories of the Lord, chanting the glories of the Lord, in accepting the mercy of the Lord, that is the medicine that we must have to purify our heart. And to the degree we have simple and grateful hearts, to that degree we can absorb and assimilate that mercy that is coming. Trinadapi sunichena tadorapi sahishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. We can understand this verse from this point of view. When you are actually humble like blade of grass, tolerant like tree, genuinely thinking that everyone else deserves respect but I do not. And when we chant the holy name in that sweet mood of consciousness, then we can fully digest the mercy of the holy name. We can get maximum purification with every mantra that we chant. Now, if we're proud and ungrateful, even if we're chanting year after year after year after year after year, we're just not able to properly digest within our hearts the supreme, most perfect medicine that will cure you. If someone is actually humble, if another devotee says, Haribo Prabhu, he thinks, oh my God, how could he call me Prabhu? If he only knew who I was, what I'm thinking at this very moment, he would not call me Prabhu. He would call me Haribo Chandala or Malecha. But because this person is so gracious and so God-fearing, this person is able to see good qualities even when there's none. He's saying like this and will be very grateful. However, if we think we deserve, then someone will give, but we're thinking, more. Why not more? Why, that's all you gave? A person gets attention from a Vaishnava. Why is he not giving me more attention? We should be thinking, this person has given me a moment. This will give me the strength to continue for the rest of my life. Such mercy. That is a grateful heart. So it's very, very dangerous to be too successful in Krishna consciousness. One of the trappings of Maya. When we first come to Krishna consciousness, we have some sense of being grateful. Because we've been suffering in this world and we're getting some special mercy. We're not really deeply grateful. If we were really and deeply grateful, we would be in the spiritual world with Krishna. We wouldn't be in this material world. But some sense of gratitude and simplicity is there. That I really do not know anything. Please instruct me, Prabhu. This is very nice. This is what I've always been looking for. And that's why when you're a new devotee, you can learn so quickly. But after some time, we think, I know everything. I know so much. I know more than you. I even know more than you. I even know more than him. I may not say it publicly, but I know. And we start getting some respect because we have done some nice service. We're able to speak some nice philosophy, or we're able to do some nice puja, or we're able to organize things in a nice way, or we just happen to be around long enough so people think we're senior. So then we start expecting. And as we're expecting, sometimes we get something nice and our ego is satisfied. We're thinking, yes, yes, very nice, this is very nice. But then you don't get it. Why? Because I'm humble, I won't say anything, but why is this happening? It's not, this person doesn't properly understand Krishna consciousness.
why Krishna is giving me like this. He should be giving me like this.
Ungrateful heart means miserable, frustrated life. And a grateful heart is always happy. A grateful heart sees the sun. How many of you see the sun? And we think, Krishna is so merciful, so kind. I don't deserve this. I have no ability to exist unless Krishna causelessly gives me this sunshine. When it rains, the rain is coming from Krishna. In Gita he says, I am the source of the rain. A devotee is grateful that I cannot survive without this rain, and Krishna is so mercifully giving it. When we take prasad, we offer this prasadam prayer. The whole purpose of this prasadam prayer is to put us in a grateful state of mind, to understand the meaning of prasadam. Prasadam is mercy. You do not deserve. You do not deserve a grain of rice that has come directly from the mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And yet we're just eating it, thinking, why is there not enough salt in this rice? Why only rice? Why not chapatis? Are we grateful? If you are starving on the street and someone gave you a plate of rice without any salt, you would be in ecstasy. But when you're ungrateful, someone gives you that same plate of rice and you're thinking, where's the sabji, where's the dal, where's the laddu, where's the halava? Why you're cooking like this? Why you don't know that we need more and we need better and everything else? So you're eating the rice in a miserable condition. So which is better, to be a beggar in the street or to be an ungrateful person who thinks who's expecting so much more? If you're grateful, you can understand it's prasad, it's mercy. Prasad doesn't mean grains and sugar and ghee. Prasad means mercy. A grateful person actually takes prasad as mercy. And that is why it is necessary for us to chant this prayer before we take prasad. Not as a ritual, but to put us in the proper frame of mind to actually benefit maximally as we're taking Krishna's mercy. Why do you think we bow down? We bow down before the deity. We bow down before Srila Prabhupada's murti. We bow down before the Vaishnavas. It's not just a ritual. It is actually to put us in the proper state of mind to receive the mercy of this particular form of the Lord or his representatives. When we bow down before the deity, we humble ourselves. That I'm a straw in the street. And when we're bowing down, we're actually in the same position as a straw in the street, just laying there. Dandavat. And if we're actually a little attentive of what we're doing and why, then when we get up, we'll be thinking, my Lord, I don't deserve to be seeing your form, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. I deserve to be seeing the form of the Yamadutas. But somehow or other, you are so kind, you are allowing me, you have invited me again and again and again. Sometimes I speak to people who are in prison. People who are in prison, who are in terrible association, suffering, abused,
not even treated like human beings, but like animals. And if a devotee comes in, some of them actually are in that arrangement, they become animals. But some rare, rare souls in that situation, when you go to see them, they are so grateful. You have come to see me. You have come to bring Krishna to me. Just to get a photo of Krishna, it's like the most glorious benediction of their life. Because they are grateful. Queen Kunti prayed, those who have too much wealth, too much education, who are too beautiful and are coming from prestigious birth lineage, those persons' tendency is to become proud and to expect so much. Such a person cannot chant the holy name of the Lord helplessly. Person can chant, but not from the heart, from the mind and the mouth. The heart can only absorb the holy name and the mercy of the Lord in all forms to the degree it is grateful to receive it. That means to the degree it is humble and considers, I do not deserve it. This is causeless mercy upon me. The elephant Gajendra, what was his qualification? He was just a big elephant, subhuman. But he prayed with such a simple and grateful heart. To actually be grateful means you have to be appreciating both what you like and what you do not like when it comes into your life. If we understand that Krishna is the supreme controller, to be grateful doesn't mean to be selectively grateful. Because that's not really being grateful at all. When someone praises me, I'm very grateful. Because I know I don't deserve it. But when someone accuses me, I become very angry because I know I don't deserve it. If you felt you deserved it, you would be grateful. It's coming from Krishna. This person is just the instrument. If some severe, intolerable crisis comes into our life, it is our prescribed duty to have to deal with it. However, internally, that's what Krishna is ultimately seeing. Internally, are you depressed? Are you thinking, why me? Are you angry with this person, that person, and the whole world, and ultimately angry with God? Or are you thinking, somehow or other, I may not understand how or why, but I do have faith that because I'm connected to the association of Vaishnavas, somehow or other, by their blessings, Krishna is taking care of my life. And if this is what he's sending, this is what I need to make spiritual advancement. So rather than just becoming frustrated, lose faith, and become angry, we go deep into trying to understand how I can reciprocate with this inconceivable form of mercy that's causing me so much pain. How to be grateful for it? Lord Jesus Christ was grateful while he was being crucified. Srila Prabhupada was grateful as he was having heart attacks, as people were robbing him and stealing him and abusing him.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was grateful when Ramchandra Puri was spreading nasty, blasphemous rumors against him all over Jagannath Puri. The devotees were outraged. And we have a right to be outraged when another devotee is offended. But the devotee himself, he's grateful. He understands, this is some mercy. I may not understand, but I need it. It's coming from Krishna. How kind. In that state of mind, you can be innerly happy in every situation of life. This is actually the formula of happiness. To not expect something else, but to be grateful for what Krishna gives in all forms. We read about that Brahman. This is a very, very classic illustration of this principle. He wanted so much to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dancing. He heard about it from others. But at that time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never made a public dance. Exclusively, he would dance in either the house of Srivas Thakur or the house of Chandrasekhar. They would lock the doors and close the windows. No one could come in except his most confidential associates. So this Brahman, he was a brahmachari from birth. Perfect celibacy. Now that's something to be proud about if you want to be proud. Who could do it? Perfect celibacy. And he didn't take any other food except he drank milk. That's pretty austere. Other people are eating so much nice prasad, he would only take milk. Not because he was diseased, but because that was his tapasya. And he was very learned in the scriptures. If he was here today, if he wanted to be, he would probably have millions of disciples. He was an exalted soul. But he wanted to see Lord Chaitanya dancing. And there was no access. But he knew the scriptures well enough to understand you cannot approach the Supreme Lord directly. But if you approach him through someone he loves, then by the intervention of a devotee, the Lord can give you mercy. That is our only hope. If Srila Prabhupada doesn't pray, Krishna, please be merciful upon this poor soul, we have no hope of getting Krishna's mercy. If we think that our dancing and chanting is going to attract Krishna, if we think that our erudite scholarship in presenting Bhagavad Gita is going to attract Krishna, then we are in total illusion. But if we're doing all these devotional activities in such a way that we're pleasing the devotee of Krishna, then the devotee of Krishna will say to Krishna, "Please, Krishna, please be kind upon this poor soul." Then you can get mercy. There's no other way. This brahmachari approached Srivas Thakur. Said, "Please, please, I know I don't deserve it. But if just one time in my life I can see Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu dancing, that will be the ultimate fulfillment of all my desires. That will cleanse my heart. Please give me this chance." Srivas Thakur said, "Very difficult. You're not one of the inside crowd. You're not one of the associates of the Lord. No one except his pure, unadulterated servants are allowed to see this dance. I'm very sorry. But this brahmachari, he came every day. If he was demanding from Srivas Thakur, Srivas Thakur, being a great Vaishnava, would have just cast him away. But he was not demanding. He was desperately, humbly, helplessly begging for mercy. That is the difference. Sometimes people invite the brahmacharis to their homes. And they demand, they expect, why is he not putting his lotus feet in my house? I've done service, I've given donations, you better put your lotus feet in my house. That consciousness, the lotus feet may come to your house, but you're not going to make so your house is not going to become so much purified. Maybe your house is, but you won't. But we read the Kurma Brahman, Venkata Bhatta, when Mahaprabhu came to those places, they didn't demand, they didn't expect, they helplessly, desperately, humbly begged. I require this, please. Narottam Das Thakur prayed that you are Patita Pavana. You are the deliverer of the most fallen. Since that is the case, you can analyze all souls within this universe and you will certainly come to the conclusion that my claim to your mercy is first because I am the most fallen. So please give me your mercy. Rupa and Sanatana Goswami were the most qualified people in the entire creation. Brahmins, learned scholars, big, big, high positions, pure hearts. But they considered themselves so fallen. Lord Chaitanya came to Ramkeli. They disguised themselves just to go to see him. They first approached Haridas Thakur and Nityananda. They didn't go to the Lord directly. They felt no qualification to do so. It was Nityananda Prabhu and Srila Thakur Haridas that brought them to the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga. That was their natural humility. With straw in their teeth, with cloth wrapped around their neck, they fell to the ground like sticks, weeping and crying. They felt they didn't deserve to be there. Lord Chaitanya placed his feet on their head. He embraced them. They were saying, my Lord, this is not understandable. We are lower than Jagai and Madhai. It was no difficult to deliver them. They were residents of Navadweep. They never served Malechas and Yavanas like us. Rupa and Sanatana, in every respect, they had all good qualities. But the fact that they served a Malecha emperor, that's all they saw. This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. A devotee looks for all good qualities in others and doesn't mind anything else. But he looks only for the bad qualities himself, and the good qualities he ignores. This is Rupa and Sanatana. Previous to this, Vaishnavas and scholars would come to Ramkeli on their invitation to discuss Srimad Bhagavatam and other great literatures. Rupa and Sanatana, who were more beautiful in physical form than Cupid, they were They were sitting on thrones with opulence like Indra. They had power, prestige. Incredible education. But yet, even if an insignificant beggar, even if a sadhu, anyone who came, they would get off their high seats and greet them wholeheartedly. Arrange prasad for them. Arrange residential facilities for them. Arrange a place near the Ganges for them to bathe. This is how they treated everyone. And when Lord Chaitanya came, they were thinking like this. They were seeing good in Jagai and Madhai. Ah, what Vaishnava, what a grateful heart you have to think like this. Jagai and Madhai were murderers, rapists, robbers, stealers. Every day and night they were setting innocent people's houses on fire. They were drunkards and the lowest of man. But Rupa and Sanatan, they were only thinking this, that they deserved your mercy because they were from Navadweep. Seeing the good in them. But what about themselves? Brahmins, scholars, pure devotees, famous. And they were thinking that we are lower and more fallen than Jagai and Madhai. To deliver him was easy, but to deliver us will be very difficult. But still, we're begging, please. We have no other hope for us to expect your mercy. Is like a tiny dwarf to touch the moon. Who can touch the moon? What to speak of a dwarf? He's farther than the moon than anyone else. But even though it's so unlikely, it's so impossible, your causeless mercy is all we have, therefore we are begging for it. We have nowhere else to turn. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, stop this talk, please. Your humility is breaking my heart. Actually, their humility melted his heart. And that's the whole process of bhakti, to melt the heart of Krishna. And this is the only qualification. A simple, grateful, humble heart. So this Brahman, he was begging. He was actually humble. That although I have all these qualifications, if I do not receive the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's all null and void. So after many days of such appeals, finally Srivas Thakur said, because you only drink milk, and you're perfect celibate, and you're a very humble and gentle brahmachari, I will arrange for you to see Lord Chaitanya's dance. But you'll have to do it secretly. So Srivas Thakur arranged a very nice hiding place. Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu came. He told the devotees to begin kirtan. He began to dance in ecstatic love. Tears sprinkling from his eyes, hair standing on end, the complexion of his body transforming into different colors, limbs trembling, voice choked up, with his arms raised, he induced everyone to ecstatically chant, Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
After some time, the Lord stopped the kirtan. I am not feeling ecstatic love by hearing the holy name in this kirtan. There must be someone who is not supposed to be here that is here. Is there anyone in this house? Srivas Thakur, he was a simple Vaishnava. One of the qualities of a devotee is they're truthful, they're honest, no matter what the consequences may be. So that devotee, Srivas, said, My Lord, there are no atheists in the house. There are no blasphemers in the house. However, there is one brahmachari, but he's celibate. In fact, he's so austere that he never drinks anything but milk. He wanted so much to see your dancing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became tumultuously angry. With thunderous voice, he proclaimed with his fingers in the sky, Get him out! Get him out before I rip him to pieces. Before I destroy the universe. What is this milk drinking? Do you think that anyone is qualified to see the Lord or to see my dance because he drinks milk? Get that milk drinker out! It is only by pure devotional service, it is not by austerities that one can understand Krishna. What was the austerity of Gajendra? He was elephant. Elephants don't perform tapasya. He was just roaming around with his so many female elephant wives and his children. But somehow or other, when he was in a helpless state, he cried out for Krishna with devotion. And therefore he saw Krishna directly. In fact, Krishna just took Gajendra right from his elephant body, on the spot transformed him into a four-armed Vishnu resident and sent him back to Vaikuntha. What about the gopis? What austerities are they doing? And Hanuman, what austere? They didn't do tapasya. They had bhakti. It is only by bhakti that one can understand Krishna. If one is proud that I am celibate, I am austere, I eat less than you. I sleep less than you. I've been celibate longer than you. Or grihasthas, I don't even have any children. You have children. All of this is just, this is false ego. This is not bhakti. So Mahaprabhu was very, very angry. Get him out! I don't want any of these austerities. I want bhakti. So the brahmachari, it was quite clear to him what his position was. He was walking out of the house. As he was walking, he was just, from the material point of view, he was totally discredited. Everything that he stood for was just obliterated. It was revealed to be meaningless. It's not easy taking nothing but milk your whole life, and after doing that, the Lord completely insults you and tells you it's offensive and bogus. Hare Krishna. It's not easy being a brahmachari. You have to give up so much. The nature of this material world, the attraction between male and female, is the basic principle of the entire material existence. No one is exempt from this attraction. To say no for the sake of a higher cause, I will not. It's very difficult. Somebody expects to be a little appreciated. Oh, you're doing very good. But this brahmachari, he was blasted with criticism. The Lord said, it's all useless, it's all nonsense, it's all null and void. And he didn't blaspheme. He didn't blast him out like this privately. It was in front of everybody with such a thunderous voice. Now, the brahmachari could have thought, I'm a good devotee. I'll go to some other mat. They don't appreciate me. This Gaudiya mat, I don't know. I'm going to go to some other mat. He could have thought like that. I'll go to where people will honor me and appreciate me for who I am and what I am and how I am and who I am and like that. No, he was thinking, what the Lord has said is correct. He didn't tell anyone this. He didn't get on a pedestal and say, yes, everything he said is true. I am humble. He just quietly walked out. But as he was walking out, within the core of his heart, he was thinking, whatever the Lord said is his mercy. It's for my purification. He's correct. I am a fallen, puffed up rascal. I don't deserve to see his dancing. But still, for that one moment, I got to see him dance. Even though I'm so undeserving, still I got to see it. How merciful is my Lord? He was grateful. He was grateful for the chastisement and grateful for that moment that he saw the Lord dance. If he felt he deserved it, he wouldn't be grateful. The Lord was so pleased because he had a simple and grateful heart that Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu called him back immediately, come back here. The brahmachari came back and Mahaprabhu placed his lotus feet on the brahmachari's head. Gave him prema bhakti. Invited him to be a regular associate of his within the kirtans each night. And informed this person, don't be proud or think that by your austerities you can achieve Krishna. It is only by devotion. The brahmachari was happy because he was grateful. Our scriptures are full of this same ideal being demonstrated. The Avanti Brahman, he was a wealthy man, addicted to his wealth. Everything taken away. All his wealth gone. His wife rejected him. His children rejected him. His family members and all of his friends rejected him. People were throwing stones on him. People were passing urine on him. Now you may think that things are bad, but how many people just come up and start passing urine on you? Throwing rocks at you.
And he was suffering miserably. But then he came to the consciousness of thinking in terms of how this is Krishna's mercy for my purification. I deserve much worse. And then he became grateful for that. And as soon as he became grateful and began to pray to the Lord with a humble mind, he became blissful, transcendentally blissful. He achieved the ultimate perfection of life. So somehow or other, the mind connected to this false ego is such a formidable enemy. That we have this insatiable desire to expect more and more for ourselves. On the physical level, on the emotional level, on the spiritual level. But when we're humble, when we really think, I do not deserve it. Let me trace back to think of the reasons why I don't deserve anything. But Krishna is personally giving me this. Then we are grateful. Then we are humble. And we should show gratitude to others. Can you imagine the farthest reaches of our mind's extent? What it would be like if we lived in a society where everyone was genuinely, humbly grateful to whatever everyone else was doing. This world would be Vaikuntha. But now everyone wants everyone else to be grateful for what I'm doing. This is what brings about an environment, social environment, by which devotional service can grow in everyone's heart. That means within the Brahmachari ashram, that means within each family's Grihastha ashram, and that means the conjoint cooperative efforts amongst all of us together. What grateful soul is there who would not render his devotional, his loving service to such a great master as the Personality of Godhead? This clearly indicates if you're not grateful, you cannot render loving service. You may be able to render some kind of service, but not loving service. Love can only be within a grateful heart. It is prerequisite. The Lord can be pleased easily by spotless devotees who resort exclusively to Him for protection, though the unrighteous man finds it difficult to propitiate Him. Is there any questions? Somehow or other, allow me to go on in my very useless service. I'm not a good speaker. That's a fact. And I really have no capacity. That is a fact. But for our purification, we have to serve Srila Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj. And he wants us to preach. So the fact that you patiently sit and listen and even invite me to speak is your causeless mercy upon me. And I'm very grateful. At least I'm trying to be grateful to all of you. Is there any questions or comments? Yes? Mm-hmm.
Prabhu. You said that prasad means mercy, but when I sit to honor prasad, I always feel that the salt is not there, something is not well cooked, or it happens that today I am not getting the taste of the prasad. But theoretically we understand this, that it's mercy, but practically when it comes when ordering prasad, always we feel that some deficiency is there in cooking. So how to overcome this?
You should concentrate on the prayer that you're singing before you take prasad. You should concentrate on what it really means. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is teaching us to say, now I take this prasad to my full satisfaction. And do so. Honor the mercy of Shishi Gornitai and Shishi Radha and Krishna. That satisfaction is not so much the satisfaction of the tongue. It is the satisfaction of the heart. Satisfaction of the tongue is not really satisfaction at all. Satisfaction comes from your heart, not from your eyes or your nose or your tongue or any part of your flesh. People are looking for satisfaction by touching something, seeing something, smelling something, tasting something. But there's no satisfaction in that. Real satisfaction is in your heart. If you know you're doing the right thing and Krishna's pleased, there'll be a satisfaction in your heart. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he stole that little piece of rice that Raghunath Das Goswami was eating, that the cows spit out. Do you remember we went to Puri? How many of you went to the yatra in Puri? Do you remember that place where the Talinga cows were eating the decomposed rice that was thrown out? First it's offered to Jagannath, then it's given to shopkeepers, and shopkeepers sell it. And that parts which are not sold, which go spoiled and rotten, they just throw it in a pile. Do you remember how that pile smelled? Do you remember how many hundreds and thousands of flies were having pilgrimage on that pile? And the parts of the rice that were too rotten for the cows to accept, they spit it out. And Raghunath Das Goswami would wash it and take the inner part of it and eat it. That's all he ate. It wasn't like that was a little side dish. That was all he ate. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who regularly, when he would go to people's houses, they would bring him the malpuras and rice and sabjis and gajas and everything from Jagannath. They would bring him the nicest prasad. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya would cook. Raghava Pandit, he would bring all these hundreds of bags of delicacies. Damayanti, his sister, when she cooked, Srimati Radharani cooked there. But yet when he took that prasad of Raghunath Das Goswami, he was in ecstasy. Never have I tasted such delicious as prasad as this. Because the love of his devotee, Raghunath Das Goswami, the austerity he was doing in pure loving service is what Lord Chaitanya tasted. Not just with his tongue, but with his heart. Of course, for the Lord, the tongue and the heart are the same. For us, our tongue and our hearts are not always the same. But it is that inner fulfillment of the heart that gives satisfaction. The satisfaction of the senses are ultimately just agitations. The satisfaction of the mind is ultimately an agitation. But the heart is where the soul is sitting. That is where real satisfaction is. So we should concentrate on this wonderful prayer. Before we chant our japa, we offer our obeisances to Srila Prabhupada and his representatives. We offer our obeisances to the Panchatattva. Why? To put our consciousness in the proper state by which we can gratefully, with a simple and attentive mind, chant the holy name. In our temple here, we chant the Shikshastakam prayers before japa every day. We're chanting. Trinara Pisunichena Tarwari Vashi Shahashtana Amanina Manina Kim Kirtaniya Sadahari. We're not just chanting it as a ritual. We're trying to actually, in a prayerful mood, put our consciousness in the proper state by which we can be able to digest the holy name with a simple and grateful heart. One more question. Shambhalava Prabhu.
Maharaj, as you rightly said in your lecture, that when someone is not grateful for whatever he is getting, then there is a tendency to complain that why this is not there, why that is not there, why that is not there. But practically, when we are living in our daily affairs, we, at least most of us, we hear, and myself also, there's tendency to complain about so many things. To complain that why this is not in this way, why that is not in that way, like this. So, is all these complaints simply because of being ungrateful? Or is there something which is genuine? And when we hear someone who is making some complaint, how can we judge and in what way we can react to such a situation?
We have to judge or evaluate our own consciousness. If we're actually and genuinely pointing out how something can improve for the overall benefit of the Vaishnavas or the mission or service to the deities, then that's not complaining. That's constructive. Constructive criticism, it is said. However, if we are complaining because our own mind and senses are not getting gratification by a certain situation, or our own ego is not getting proper gratification, then that complaining only reinforces and perpetuates an ungrateful spirit of heart. So it's better if we reflect and be a little more philosophical and tolerate that urge and actually pray to Krishna, let me become actually grateful. If we're in a position, it's not that every devotee should be the manager of the temple. If we see that a certain situation within our family house or within the temple, within our environment, is not up to par of how we can best conjointly serve the Vaishnavas. For instance, if things are dirty, unclean, to just be grateful for that. If the deity's pots are not clean, if the temple's not clean, to say nothing and be grateful for that is Maya. We should be grateful for the opportunity to make a difference. And in a constructive and humble way, if we're not an authority position, we can present that actually this is not clean and I'm trying to clean it myself, but I can't do it so much, but I just want to bring it to your attention that devotees are suffering because of this. It doesn't give a good image. That's not complaining. That's constructive. It's done in a mood of service. And if you're in an authoritarian, if your service is to be with some authority over others as a humble service, you should say, no, it should not be dirty. Who has done like this? Why is it like this? But you're not doing it to complain for your own personal sense gratification. You're doing it to actually improve the quality of the consciousness of others. Does that understand? So there's a difference between constructive criticism and complaining. But there's also a fine line of where the demarcation, just like in Kashmir, there's this line of control. And if you cross over the line of control, then there's all kinds of bloodshed. But there's always an argument of where is the line of control. So in the same way, that line of where we're complaining and where we're constructively just trying to serve, we have to be very careful to understand where that line of control is and respect it. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very, very, very much.